this week on COVID, race, and democracy.
It's becoming clearer that the administration is openly siding with the Zionists, and it's very concerning.
We'll look at the growing attacks on Palestinian professors and students throughout the U.S. and the role of tech companies in censoring and shutting down classes and panels on the Palestinian struggle.
This is a distraction from the real struggle against real existing lethal anti-Semitism, the people who attack synagogues, the people who deface cemeteries, the people who murdered Jews, the people who marched through Charlottesville, Virginia, saying Jews will not replace us. That is real lethal neo-Nazi white supremacist anti-Semitism.
Can we have democratic debate and democracy when state and private institutions use their power to sanitize the viewpoint of Palestinians? And an update on the Columbia University United Auto Workers graduate student strike. From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and radio affiliates. I'm your host, Tia Coatley of Pacifica affiliate WXOX in Louisville, Kentucky. We start with the largest current strike in New York City, that of the graduate workers of Columbia United Auto Workers Local 2110. Nearly 2,000 are on strike for living wages. We hear from Professor Rashid Khalidi.
Well, the graduates, they live in one of the most expensive cities in the world, and the wages that they earn for their work do not amount to a living wage in terms of New York City. Most of them, the rent that they pay, even the subsidized Columbia University housing that's offered to them, takes up well over half of their take-home pay. And so they, for those and other reasons, including a demand for neutral arbitration after the legal process, the EEOC mandated legal processes are completed. We feel that, at least I feel, and many of my colleagues feel, that their position is fully justified. And we only hope that the union succeeds and that the university will accede to their demands, which are, in my view, fully justified. The university has hired a union busting law firm, Proskauer and Rhodes, a very expensive union busting law firm, and are playing hardball with them, as they have all through these negotiations. They've made a few concessions to the university, but and the students have also moderated their demands somewhat, but I'm afraid they're not yet near an agreement.
That was Professor Rashid Khalidi, and we'll go back to him later about the attack on Palestinian professors and students in the U.S. The effort to conflate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism appears to be the official policy of the U.S. government. Vice President Kamala Harris sent a 3-minute taped video introduction to the November 7th through 9th conference of the Anti-Defamation League in New York City.
When Israel is singled out because of anti-Jewish hatred, that is anti-Semitism, and that is unacceptable.
Students in San Francisco are protesting the ongoing attacks on Professor Rabab Abdulhadi, who is the chair of the Arab and Muslim Ethnicities and Diasporas Program. In May, students spoke out about Zoom, Facebook, and YouTube's shutdown of the program panels.
1, 2, 3, 4, occupation no more!
5, 6, 7, 8.
Through an education without critical engagement with Palestine. Where is it that students can go to learn about Palestine in our universities? At San Francisco State, Professor Rabab Abdulhadi founded and directs Ahmed to critically engage with Palestine and Arab and Muslim communities across the world. Ahmed and Dr. Abdulhadi are subject to routine Zionist attacks and have been defunded by the university at every opportunity. Pursuing justice requires us to analyze, criticize, and transform the systems of power around us. But how can we do this if we can't even talk about Palestine? My fellow graduate students and I have come together to demand a seminar on graduate studies for Ahmed to teach Palestine in our universities. And this comes at a time when the university has escalated their attacks against Ahmed, stood idly by a Zoom, Facebook, and YouTube, have censored our webinars, but has failed to adequately defend Dr. Abdulhadi and her students from Zionist attacks and white supremacist hate. This escalation comes at the time of the COVID-19 pandemic, where universities and we stand for Palestine.
Next, we hear from San Francisco State University graduate Noura Khoury about the decade-long attacks on the Arab and Muslim Ethnicities and Diasporas, AMED, studies program at San Francisco State University. She speaks with Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
The program and Professor Rabab Abdulhadi has been basically under attack since its inception in late 2000, and each subsequent president, I think there have been three, have promised, you know, full funding of the program and has recruited Professor Rabab under pretense that they would develop this program to make it, you know, something that could be a fully funded and well-resourced program under the Ethnic Studies Department. Since that time, the Zionists under various networks and different convenings have been attacking the program under, you know, false claims, attacking professor, our community leader, respected just academics, students. All of our community leaders have been under attack from student union, as well as just an ongoing failure by the administration to defend them has led to ongoing cuts and decimation of the program. There's only one professor. Rabab is the only paid full-time staff. She's having to pay staff assistance out of her own pocket just to keep the program alive. So it's really just outrageous that we've had to fight for just the basic resources to keep this program going over the last 10 years. And it's continuing. And not only is it getting, you know, has it been ongoing, it's becoming clearer that the administration is openly siding with the Zionists, and it's very concerning. This is a program that's very important to our community and just to our people, as well as the city and the state of San Francisco, which is very valuable. The Ahmed program and Dr. Rabab have, you know, never been found to be anti-Semitic, so any claims that are made by these trolls are completely baseless and really just egregious. So they mean nothing. Sure, those are the state, you know, the claims that they're attacking her with. But under this new anti-Semitic definition, basically anyone that criticizes Israel can have this thrown at them with no basis. You know, there's been lawsuits that have been thrown out, two now, by judges who don't want, you know, them to waste their time anymore, because even in the court of law, there has been no evidence provided that have, you know, asserted these claims to be true.
The Jewish Community Federation of San Francisco was involved in funding the Canary Mission and other projects to target Professor Abdulhadi and others. What was that about?
Well, this is what the JCRC does. They have been attacking our community programs and leaders. They've been the ones behind this. But for as long as I can remember, they have attacked, you know, children's art with Mecca. They have attacked AROC with their ethnic studies campaign that they're working on a curriculum with the state of California. Like, anything that speaks out about the truth is anti-Semitic to these, so-called Jewish community leaders who claim to speak for the Jewish community, but they only speak for Zionist Jewish community, which in our Jewish anti-Zionist comrade terms is the definition of anti-Semitism, because they're claiming that all Jews agree with the state of Israel and Zionism, which is absolutely false claim. And we're standing with, you know, our Jewish brothers and sisters that are anti-Zionist, from JVP to IJAN and different program groups beyond that, you know, that are our brothers and sisters in this struggle, and we are fighting alongside with for justice, which is indivisible, as Rabab teaches. And what they don't want to get out is that truth. So we have a different perspective.
What has been the response of President Mahoney about the shutdown by Zoom, Facebook, and YouTube of the classes from the Ahmed program?
Well, she says in uncertain terms that she stands against it and doesn't support these attacks, but there's nothing she can do about them, which is completely false. They have, you know, contracted with these tech giants to which they're paying them clearly, you know, thousands, if not tens of, not hundreds of thousands of dollars to outsource for programming now that, you know, everything has gone online. So we're dependent on these programs more than ever. So they cannot have be the ones to determine what kind of speech is allowed or not. This sets a very dangerous precedent, not just for Palestine, but for any liberation or justice struggle in academia and beyond. So this is setting up a, you know, just really high stakes. Whatever goes down here, they're going to be able to, you know, continue to attack our movements and struggle for justice. Like, this is unacceptable, and that's a very dangerous precedent that we cannot allow to stand.
So this is not just about Professor Abdulhadi, but also other programs, classes at public institutions being threatened of being shut down and censored by these tech giants. Is that the case?
That's right. And it's only an extension of the 1968 student strike that fought, you know, tooth and nail and lost their jobs and livelihoods to create ethnic studies across the country, not just at San Francisco State, but this is something that has value and meaning to everyone that cares about ethnic studies in the country. Like, this is the home of that struggle. And, you know, we are asking what progress has been made since 1968, because in many ways we're rolling back to that time where there was no such thing as freedom of speech when you talk about the truth. And this whole attack on critical race, which is, yeah, just a question of teaching the truth of colonial history in the universities. I went to San Francisco State. I studied international relations. I got a stellar education in the truth about the history of this country and its role in foreign policy, not just in Palestine, but across the world. And this is what has opened my eyes and mind to the truth and reality that I would not have known of or found anywhere else had I not been exposed to it there. So this is an incredibly, like, high stakes and really valuable moment that we can defend, you know, truth, justice, history, like, to be written by us, we the people, rather than the colonizers who are trying to set the narrative for future generations, and it cannot stand.
That was San Francisco State University graduate Nora Khoury speaking to Pacifica producer Steve Zeltzer.
Hay que hacer, no solamente hablar. Boycott Israel.
Being by the tallest, knowledge was the fifth element. Truth behind the lies is what the music represents. So how the you gonna have a peace settlement when people want a piece of your land to build settlements? There's all different kind of terrorism you could perpetrate. Every dead body causes karma to circulate. It's suicide bombing buildings full of civilians, or cutting off water to cities full of children. You can't try to justify collective punishment. A country never finds peace with bodies buried under it. I guess some Americans just don't remember there's a slave graveyard under the World Trade Center. Stop the criticism of Iranian nuclear fission until mutual nuclear disarmament's the mission. This ain't about religion, Muslim, Jew, or Christian. It's about people making money off of that division.
Sin que medien armamentos, digo, siempre es buen momento pa' iniciar. Entendimiento es demasiado, el desencuentro siento. Que el respeto debe ser boleto al parlamento. Es el respeto el primer paso, si no lo que sigue es cuento. Es un complejo asunto, cuánto tiempo, son cientos de años. El premio al mayor daño pa' los de menor tamaño. Con me empeño en no estar de acuerdo con ninguna posición que implique tal o más cual versión de discriminación, brother. Violencia, intolerancia en cualquier forma de presión, más allá de cualquier religión, visión de obsesión. Hay que hacer, no solamente hablar. Boycott Israel.
That was Boycott Israel by Immortal Technique. You're listening to Pacifica's COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm the host, Tia Coatley. The effort to support Israel is bipartisan in Congress, including funding to the tune of billions in U.S. tax dollars. Next, we hear from Professor Rashid Khalidi, Edward Said Professor of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University and Director of the Middle East Institute of Columbia School of International and Public Affairs. He is the author of numerous books, including most recently, The Hundred Years' War on Palestine, A History of Settler Colonialism and Resistance, 1917 to 2017. He spoke to Thomas O'Rourke of Pacifica's WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think there's a campaign well-funded, well-organized, centralized, international, with inspiration and I believe also more than inspiration from the Israeli government. They had a thing called the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, which has now been folded into the Israeli Foreign Ministry, publicly takes credit for organizing these campaigns. And there is a multitude of organizations. Stand With Us, the Canary Mission. There are a half dozen or more legal, informational, political, and other groups on campus and largely off campus. In fact, the central organization of this comes from off campus. It's not students who are doing this or faculty. It's a well organized off campus campaign. And Palestine Legal provides support and assistance, sometimes legal and sometimes of other kinds, mainly legal, but sometimes just advice to students who have been targeted by really truly ugly campaigns, which include searching through their social media posts, going back to when they were 12 or 13 or 14 years old to find things that may appear incriminating or seem unseemly. And generally twisting and distorting those things in such a way, and then publishing them. There's a campaign ongoing today, right now, at the University of Illinois in Chicago, where a large number of students have been publicly attacked by, I think it's in this case, Canary Mission and Stand. I think it's called Stand With Us, in a way that is meant to really intimidate and terrify. 20 and 21 and 22-year-old undergraduates.
You, if just in that answer, sort of implicated the state of Israel, the role of it and its supporters in these efforts. You might not have seen in today's consortium news, but I believe based on a Truthout article earlier by Marjorie Cohn, where she sort of documented efforts to cut the financial lifelines of six prominent Palestinian human rights groups have been traced to the Shin Bet, designate them as terrorist organizations.
Yeah, this is that campaign against these six very prominent Palestinian human rights NGOs is one organized by the Israeli government, but with an echo chamber in Europe and the United States, which to my way of thinking is probably the primary target. In other words, the Israeli military occupation can do anything it likes. It doesn't need law. It doesn't need declarations. They can just drag people up, throw them in jail, put them under administrative detention, seize their files, seize their computers, their cameras, whatever they want. There's no legal restraint on anything they do of any sort, right up to the Israeli Supreme Court, which is basically a rubber stamp for whatever is deemed to be of importance in terms of security in Israel. That's a magic word. You say security, you can do anything you want. So none of this was necessary in order to crush these civil society organizations in terms of the occupied territories. Those are territories under the jackboot of the military occupation for 54 years, and the Israeli military does as it pleases. This campaign is directed at the United States and Europe to tar and to discredit and to make unmentionable and unfrequentable and most importantly unfinanceable these organizations, which to some extent depend on external financial support for their existence. We are the targets. The United States and Europe are the targets. The people who will suffer, of course, are members of these organizations. They may well be jailed. In fact, many of them have already been arrested or interrogated, and many of them have had their computers and so forth. Many of these offices have already been stormed by Israeli security forces and the content seized. But I don't think that is the primary target. It is a target. It is a target. The primary target is the United States and Europe, because what these institutions have documented together with Israeli institutions that fortunately don't operate under military law, fortunately don't operate in a situation where there's absolutely no legal restraints on the state. What they have documented is a disturbing pattern that is leading to changes in opinion, which has terrified the powers that be in the Israeli state and in the Israeli security services. And so what they're trying to do is to discredit these organizations here in the United States and Europe, and essentially try to intimidate potential funders into cutting off their support for these organizations.
There has been an international campaign to argue that criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic by its nature.
Yes.
Recently, Vice President Kamala Harris, while speaking at the ADL convention, made the statements that tied together criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. In Britain, Bristol's university, a sociologist at Bristol University, David Miller, was recently fired, with supporters of Israel saying he was anti-Semitic, echoing the smears that were used to tar Jeremy Corbyn's opposition Labour Party during the last year's election campaign. What do you think of these efforts, and why should they be opposed by academia and the public at large?
Well, for two reasons. The first reason is they are a distraction from real, existing, lethal, murderous anti-Semitism, which is almost entirely on the right. The real bigots are white supremacists. The real bigots are neo-Nazis. The people who kill Jews are in that sector of the political spectrum, whether in the United States or in Europe. That's real, existing, lethal, serious anti-Semitism. Any attempt to distract from the struggle against that terribly serious problem and growing problem, which is what this entails. It means saying people who are trying to call for Palestinian rights are anti-Semites. This is a distraction from the real struggle against real existing lethal anti-Semites, the people who attack synagogues, the people who deface cemeteries, the people who murdered Jews, the people who marched through Charlottesville saying, Virginia, saying, Jews will not replace us. That is real, lethal, neo-Nazi, white supremacist anti-Semitism. That's the danger to Jews. What is being attacked in the guise of a campaign against anti-Semitism is any form of criticism of Israel, is any criticism of Israeli policies, is something that actually has little or nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It's something that's driven by people who are concerned for Palestinian rights. It's something that's driven by people who are concerned for human rights. It's something that's driven by a concern for the fact that the United States is the enabler, the supporter, the defender, the funder of massive human rights violations, many of them carried out in violation of U.S. law with American weapons, which are only supposed to be used for defensive purposes. And that campaign and those efforts have absolutely nothing to do with the kind of neo-Nazi stuff that happens with alarming frequency in the United States and in Europe, and which is an entirely different phenomenon. So on the one hand, it's this campaign to tar supporters of Palestinian rights with the brush of anti-Semitism distracts from the real issue, which is anti-Semitism, Jew hatred, by neo-Nazis, by white supremacists, and by others who, for whatever reasons, religious, bigotry, other forms of bigotry, are engaged in vicious kinds of anti-Semitism. Their speech are much more dangerously action. And secondly, it's an attempt to shut down a demand for Palestinian rights and a critique of Israel's denial of Palestinian rights. In a way which is the real, this is the real cancel culture. This is the real attempt to shut down a debate. This is a problem for supporters of an Israeli policy which depends on the oppression of the Palestinians. And there's absolutely no reason why somebody who calls for an end to oppression of the Palestinians or an end to this or that form of American support for that oppression should be called an anti-Semite. They are critics of an existing nation state. They're not critics. They're not people who hate Jews or the Jewish people per se. And I think it's really important that those things be disaggregated. And one can perhaps make a critique of Palestinian rights discourse One can make a critique of the criticisms of Israel, but I frankly think it's completely illegitimate to tar it, as has been done, with the label of anti-Semitism, and to use something like the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism, most of the examples of which that are given in illustrating the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition, most of which are simply defenses of the state of Israel. They have nothing to do with anti-Semitism per se. They have to do with critical speech about Israel and its policies. And that, to my way of thinking, is fundamentally illegitimate and distracts from a really serious problem, which is real world deadly anti-Semitism, a growing problem. And it's a tragedy that major organizations have allowed themselves to be used in this way.
And some of the major organizations who seem to have been drawn into this campaign are some of the tech companies. That's academic classes on Zoom, Facebook, YouTube at San Francisco State University have been blocked. And the Ahmed program.
I'm familiar with that case, yeah. It's a matter of letting the fox into the chicken coop. In the name of policing certain kinds of speech, people whose primary job is to defend Israel and to prevent any criticism of it are brought in on advisory boards or are employed by these megalithic companies, Facebook and so forth, Google, Apple, whatever. And they then proceed to police speech or to lay down rules whereby these organizations, these companies, police speech, essentially censoring anything Palestinians say or anything supporters of Palestinian rights say in the name of halting anti-Semitism. And that's it's a really troubling, for anybody who's concerned about freedom of speech, it's a really troubling instance of a terrible, terrible infringement of the First Amendment. In this case, by a government, by San Francisco State being a government institution. It's a state institution.
That was Rashid Khalidi, Edward Said, Professor of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University and Director of Middle East Institute of Columbia School of International and Public Affairs, in conversation with WPFW producer Thomas O'Rourke. Professor Khalidi's most recent book is The Hundred Years War on Palestine, A History of Settler Colonialism and Resistance, 1917 to 2017. Jess Ghanem and Jamal Dajani, co-host of Arab Voices on Pacifica's KPFT Houston, interviewed Dr. Rabab Abdulhadi about San Francisco State University's acceptance of big tech censorship of academic discussion and its complicity with Zionist organizations.
We've actually seen the university president collaborating with the pro-Israel group, actually partnering with them, and at the same time also completely going against what academic freedom is. Academic freedom is not only lip service. You can't just say, I'm for academic freedom, but then do everything against it, just like James Baldwin says. You know, maybe I like what you say, but I really would like to see your deeds. Do your deeds match your actions and your words? If your deeds do not match your words, then what do we make of your words? They don't mean anything. They're only basically ink on paper.
Israel has recently targeted six Palestinian human rights organizations, accusing them of terrorism. There is a coordinated campaign to vilify and criminalize academics in the U.S. and elsewhere who criticize Israeli apartheid practices. Is there a connection between the two? Is this a coordinated effort? I mean, I find it like tone deaf for the president to overrule her own panel at a time when the world, actually, we know, for example, Human Rights Watch has labeled Israel as an apartheid state. Its own human rights organization, B'Tselem, also labeled it as an apartheid state. Everybody's criticizing Israel for its action, trying to vilify human rights organizations and vilify basically Palestinian civil society. And then she does the same thing on campus.
Yes, Jamal, I think this brings up three points. Let me just say them briefly. One is that it is very clear that Israel has failed to crush Palestinians, their narratives, and their quest for freedom has failed. Zionism has failed in its effort. Now, when bullies fail, they get nastier. Bullies get bullier, get nastier, and so on. So this coordinated campaign is definitely is by the Israeli government and by its what we call apologists, the Israel lobby group. So I don't think it's sort of, it's not a cottage industry. It's actually a coordinated campaign. Instead of actually pressuring Israel to do the right thing, they're enabling and emboldening Israel what's going on. Second point I would say is that it is very much coordinated. So we see actually the same playbook in the language that describes Palestinian human rights organizations. They're human rights organizations, for God's sake, that describe me, that has acted me. And also, just as we, as now, there's a huge probe by Associated Press, 972 magazine, and so on, that actually showed that there is no basis, that even Israel internal agency, Shem Bet, has no basis for this. But this is sort of like a smokescreen to divert attention from the exposure of what Israel is doing. And this is the same thing with me, is that again and again and again, Zionists have accused me. The university itself has conducted multiple probes, which are unfair, and actually it was character assassination. And every single one of them, I came out of it squeaky clean, not only iffy, squeaky clean, but they continued. The second point is that you and I also remember from the 80s, the big campaign you began by talking about the anti-apartheid activist, Ronnie Kasriv, anti-Zionist anti-apartheid activist who was on our panel. There was a huge campaign, and there was also supporters of the apartheid regime in South Africa were also trying to kind of sugarcoat it, as they say, and then at the end of the day, you cannot salvage. You cannot salvage.
I want to add this, because I don't know if our viewers remember, but what you're talking about also in the 80s, the ADL was involved in the supporting the apartheid regime of South Africa and silencing opposition right here in the United States in collaboration with the San Francisco Police Department. One officer was arrested because he was spying on both Palestinian activists and on anti-apartheid activists right here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
This right, is and in one of their homes, they actually found the key to the home of Alex Hode, the ADC coordinator of the West Coast, who was assassinated by people who were connected with the Jewish Defense League, who some of them are hiding in Israeli settlements in Palestine. So the thing is, it's not only that. Actually, the Jerusalem Post had multiple articles showing South African Zionists supporting South Africa and saying that. And at one point during the Intifada, Israel said, they were asked, why aren't you using water cannons against Palestinian protesters? They said, we ran out, we gave them to South Africa. I mean, there is this whole, it's not only about the cooperation. It's really, the point is that this is a regime that's bankrupt. This is a system that's colonial, that's racist, that is involved in apartheid, that's repressing people. And so what is happening is that there is an attempt, just like the Reagan administration at the time said, let's engage in constructive engagement. Let's talk to South Africa and see what's going on. This is exactly what President Mahoney has done too. The only way we can do it is talk. And if you recall, by the way, in November last year, 2020, the student government at San Francisco State passed a resolution demanding that the university divest from companies that further the occupation, the military occupation. President Mahoney wrote to the student and said, I'm rejecting your democratic decision, just the same way as she did now, completely disregarding the faculty. I'm not going to do it. You need to talk. And we're saying, President Mahoney, where do you live? Which world do you live in? Don't you think that it might be actually much more beneficial for you to face reality and see what's going on and join the rest of the world, not actually be in the camp that supports repression, colonialism, Zionism, intimidation, and McCarthyism. I mean, this is what the pro-Israel groups are doing. And in that sense, also, it's a huge violation of academic freedom for university to enable Zoom to veto the content of our classrooms. This is unheard of. This has far-reaching implications to all academics and all university programs and so on. So it's actually quite disgraceful and quite disappointing.
Do you feel that the ultimate goal through this policy of harassment is to dismantle the Ahmed program, confirming San Francisco State University complicity with Zionist organizations that seek to silence Palestinian voices on campuses across the country?
Yes, yes, I do. I believe that there is this attempt to silence everybody who speaks, all the critics, people who speak. It's an attempt to dismantle any institutional project. So San Francisco State is actually acting on the side of the oppressors today. San Francisco State's action and the university's action are doing this. And now they're trying to undermine and dismantle the Ahmed Salih program because it is an institutionalized program that teaches justice, that teaches truth. We don't tell students you need to be pro-Palestinian, pro-Israel or whatever. We just give students all the material. And as you know, by the way, Rofer has sued me and said that I try to indoctrinate the students, and the university gave them 400 pages of my collaboration with Al-Najah National University, and they were looking for a smoking gun. There is no smoking gun. Even Zionist students say that they come to my class and they're treated fairly because it is about really education. At the end of the day,
just to remind our listeners, they sued you and they lost in 2017.
They lost big time. We actually defeated them big time when the judge dismissed with prejudice. They didn't just dismiss. Dismissed Judge Orek, William Orek III, dismissed with prejudice and told them to go do whatever they want with their thing and so on. None of it is valid. Everything that they have said was completely, completely untrue, inaccurate and so on. But the problem is that they don't learn from history. They keep coming back at you. And what is really unfortunate is that the University, San Francisco State University, which historically had the mission of social justice, San Francisco State University was the home, 1968, of the student strike led by the Black Student Union and the Third World Liberation Front, including the late Terry Collins, the president of KPOO, may he rest in peace and power. This was something that demanded decolonizing the curriculum, demanding opening the university classes to everybody else. And this is what we're doing in Ahmed. And Terry always said, Ahmed is doing what we wanted to do in 1968. This is unacceptable to San Francisco State leadership due to its corporatized relations, due to its corporatized, part of them has to do with Zionist group, part of them has to do with tech giants, because they're really more concerned about donations and money and about kind of like doing a few fluffy cosmetic changes and so on than about really real education and pedagogy, which we are doing at Ahmed. They're very troubled by it. So they would like to dissolve the program in service to their Zionist collaborators. And also, so we would go away and we would not kind of continue teaching and educating and engaging in these kind of things that are really important to all communities, not only to Arab Palestinians and Muslims, to everybody. Actually, we have tons of supporters also from Jewish communities who also do not agree with San Francisco State that claims Zionism owns Jewishness and are actually quite offended by it. Our Jewish sisters and brothers.
That was SFSU Professor Rabab Abdulhadi speaking to Jess Ghanam and Jamal Dajani, co-host of KPFT Houston's Arab Voices.
صباح الخير يا ولاد عمومنا تفضلوا شرفونا شو بتحب مضيفكم دم عربي ولا دموع من عيوننا بعتقد هيك تأملوا نستقبل من هيك تعقدوا لما تدركموا على غلطة من هيك لبسنا الكوفي البيضة والسودة صاروا كلاب الزمان يلبسوها كمودة مهما تفننوا فيها مهما غيروا بلونة كوفية عربية بتضل عربية حطتنا بدنياه ثقافتنا بدنياه كرامتنا بدنياه كل شي إلنا بدنياه ما رح نسكت لن نسمح لن ليك بقلن يسرقوا شغلة مش إلهن ما خصن فيه قلدونا بلتبس لبس هالقرب يكفي هنش طمعانين عالقدس قدس اعرفوا كيف تكونوا بشر جينا نذكرن مين إحنا وغصب عن أبوهم هاي حطتنا من هيك لبسنا الكوفي لأننا وطنية الكوفي كوفي عربي من هيك لبسنا الكوفي هويتنا الأساسية الكوفي كوفي عربي يلا علم كوفي علولي هالكوفي الكوفي كوفي
Music by Shadia Mansour. This is Pacifica's COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Tia Coatley. David Miller is a sociologist and until recently was a professor at Bristol University in the United Kingdom. He was fired on October 1st, allegedly for anti-Semitism. Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer interviewed him about his firing and the history of the effort by the supporters of Israel to terminate him.
I kind of got interested in Zionism and the whole question of settler colonialism in Israel-Palestine as a result of engagement in work on the Iraq war. So post 9/11, I became interested again in conflict in a big way in propaganda around conflict. So I wrote about the drive to war in Afghanistan. You can see behind me on the shelf, front cover of a book I did on Iraq and propaganda back in 2003. And as a result, we got into looking at the neocons in the US, and in particular, looking at the way in which neoconservative ideas were spreading across Europe. So the creation and institutionalization of neoconservative think tanks in the UK, in Italy, in France, and many other European countries. And I started to do that work in around about 2008, 2009. And that was the first time that I was mystified. I was accused of being an anti-Semite. And I didn't really understand what was going on there. And so I wanted to find out more about that. And it was in finding out more about that that I found out more about Zionism and became much more interested and understood much more about the role of Zionism in the neoconservative movement, yes, but also skipping forward a little bit in the promotion of ideas about terrorism, extremism, about Islam, which suited the interests of the Israeli state and were used in an attempt to drive the policy in Western states in a more authoritarian direction.
And for those who don't know, what was the role of Israel in the invasion of Iraq by the United States?
Well, it's not that it had a direct role in the invasion of Iraq, although it did have a role. I mean, it's more that the role of the neoconservative movement in the Iraq invasion, both in this country and in the US, was significant. And the attack after 9/11, especially after 7/7 in the UK, the 7/7 bombings in the UK, the attack on Muslims in general was something which became effectively the preeminent form of racism in the UK, and I think in the US too. And that was led by counterterrorism policies of the UK, for example, what's known here as the PREVENT policy, which targets Muslims and systematically discriminates against Muslims in this country. And that policy was, of course, encouraged by the neocons and by the Zionist funders of the neocons, and indeed by parts of the Zionist movement more generally. And the Zionist movement, we were also able to show, was active in funding parts of the conservative movement further to the right than the neocons. So that's the far right, the counter-jihad movement, and all your famous American Islamophobic organizations, Middle East Forum, David Horowitz Center, all the ones that are well-known in the US, funded to a large extent by Zionist philanthropies, which are also engaged at the same time, of course, in funding activities beyond the Green Line in Jerusalem and in the settlements in the Golan Heights and formerly in Gaza. So what became clear was that the Zionist movement has a key role in moving counterterrorism policy to the right towards a more overt anti-Muslim agenda, as well as having a role in encouraging Islamophobic street movements. And we started to write about this and to write about Islamophobia. And that was what got me into trouble originally, was that I did a lecture at the University of Bristol on Islamophobia and discussed the role of the Zionist movement in some of this. It's not the only factor pushing Islamophobia, of course, when we say that the state is the main factor pushing Islamophobia, but we do identify a specific role for the Zionist movement. And that led to complaints, which were initially rejected by the university, a long investigation where I was cleared.
What did they charge you with for an investigation at that time?
Well, I mean, the first complaint was about the lecture, where I'd outlined what we call the five pillars theory of Islamophobia, where the state is the backbone, the first pillar. And then there are other social movements, the neocons, the Zionists, the counter-jihad movement in the far right, and elements of the left, kind of pro-war left, anti-Islam left, which together are, we say, the main factors which push forward Islamophobia in the contemporary period. And so they complained about that. They complained that I'd mentioned the Zionist movement. They complained that this was anti-Semitic, that I was talking about Jewish organizations as opposed to Zionist organizations. And they tried to suggest that that was what the slides I'd used had indicated, when it was perfectly apparent that they didn't indicate that. And that what we were talking about was a specific political movement called Zionism, which has particular commitments, which are not secrets, particular connections to each other, which are, again, not secrets, which are organizational. And so that's what we were suggesting. And then later on, when I made comments about Zionism and about the relationship of Zionism to racism, and to the question of ethnic cleansing in Palestine, the settlement of and the stealing of land in Palestine, that was said to be anti-Semitic. And I was investigated directly for this by the university. I was on three separate occasions entirely cleared of being anti-Semitic, big surprise. But nevertheless, the campaign didn't let up. And what's happened eventually is that they've sacked me for making comments which they claim have upset Jewish students. And that's my crime.
Also, the Zionists have pushed this language about what is anti-Semitism, correlating criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. Why don't you talk about that whole scheme or plan to basically say anyone that's a critic of Israel is also anti-Semitic?
Well, I mean, it's very interesting. I've been doing quite a lot of work on this, as it happens, over the past 2 to 3 years, in particular in the context of the attack in this country on the leadership of the Labour Party when it was led by Jeremy Corbyn, who, of course, was removed partly after pro-Israel activists got...
And Ken Loach as well has been expelled from the Labour Party for being an anti-Semite.
That's right. I mean, completely absurd. But there's been a long-term campaign by, I'm going to say the Israeli government, but let me qualify that in a second, to blur the distinction between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, and to start to say that actually anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. There is no gap. There's no distinction, and that goes back really, first of all, to 1967 and the period after the annexation of the Golan Heights of Sinai Desert and the territories in the West Bank and Gaza, when they started to come under a lot of criticism, you know, much more criticism than they had previously been under. And they started to make this argument that there was a new anti-Semitism. So I wanted to look back at this because in the contemporary period, that's what they're trying to do. So I wanted to look back at what the history of this was. And I mean, as it turned out, this goes back a long, long way, back to the campaigns against Soviet anti-Semitism in the 50s and the 60s, which we now know, because documents have been released by the Israeli government, was simply a campaign led by the Israeli government's secret intelligence unit called Natif, or the Lishka, the Bureau, as it was known. And even further than that, such that in the 1940s, before the creation of the State of Israel, there was an organization in the US which was spying on Arab Americans who were campaigning against the creation of the State of Israel. And they were spying on that organization and sending the information to the armed forces of the Haganah, the forces which became the IDF, and indeed to the FBI. And that organization that still exists today is the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. So, I mean, that's an indication that the whole question of the separation of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism and the attempt to blur it goes way back to even before the creation of the State of Israel. That's something we found out recently. But to take it forward a step, I mean, that the really concentrated effort to do this has been accomplished through the Global Forum for Countering Anti-Semitism, which was set up in 2000 by Sharansky, and had its first meetings, big meetings, in 2007 to 2008. And if you look back at the documents, many of the documents are still online for these conferences, you see the argument that what has to be done here is we have to create the idea that anti-Zionism is a form of anti-Semitism, and we have to find ways to discuss that and to convince people of that. And that's what that process leads directly to the European Union Monitoring Centre's working definition of anti-Semitism, which was then junked by the European Union, but was taken up by the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, the IHRA definition, and which is the one which has been adopted by the Labour Party in this country, by many other governments, by my university. In the middle of the complaint against me, they paused the complaint and changed the rules, adopted the IHRA, and then they started to evaluate me against the IHRA, against completely different rules. I mean, completely absurd. But even against those new rules, I was found not to be an anti-Semite. You know, I mean, so the whole thing didn't work, but that's what they were attempting to do. So the creation and the rolling out of the IHRA definition has been something which they've spent a long, long time doing. It's been a concentrated effort. And they have that together with a whole series of organizations which they've set up in this country, and they do it in other countries. They certainly do it in the US. A whole series of organizations they set up, some of them are funded directly by Israel, others just from the Zionist movement more generally, which the function of which is to do research on the left, on the Muslims, on the Arabs, on the Palestinians, and to find out stuff about them, which they can use to have them sacked from their jobs, to have them removed from roles of importance, to have them step down as political candidates, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's the game, right? You change the definition of anti-Semitism, and you have a whole range of organizations whose function is to find out stuff which might be seen, if you look at it in a funny way, as anti-Semitism.
Well, if they are able to get away with firing academics, teachers who are critical of Israel, accusing them of being anti-Semitic, where's that going to lead as far as the university as a place where you can actually have any real debate and discussion on these issues?
Well, I mean, it means that it's very, very difficult to have discussion. Not only is it very difficult to say anything about Israel-Palestine or about the plight of the Palestinians without being defamed and libeled as an anti-Semite, but as everyone recognizes, this sends a chill factor through the universities so that people are not sure if they can discuss certain things in class, or if what might happen is that a recording of their lecture might be sent to a hostile newspaper, or students might complain about them. And it really undermines the whole set of relationships that there are between staff and students. The staff will have a variety of political views, a variety of different sorts of research in the area of social sciences, which might support one side or another in a particular conflict. But the idea that that students will be informing on staff and their political disagreements with staff will be taken seriously as a reason to terminate contracts or discipline staff is a quite a new idea. And the fact they've sacked me is pretty unprecedented in this country. And no one so far has given me a precedent for this kind of activity.
They have these lists in the United States. The ADL has collected lists. And one of the issues also that maybe you can address is the fact that Israel itself has worked with anti-Semites, given guns to regimes, Ukraine, where they had Nazi brigades, and that in history, the Zionists actually worked with the Nazis. Had medals made because they had a similar racialist ideology that Jews did not belong in Germany, they belonged in Palestine.
Yeah, I mean the example of the ADL is interesting. And the ADL is a fascinating organization that you will know it since you've been spied on it a lot better than I will. but there's a similar organization here, and that was, of course, the organization which took the first complaint against me. That's called the Community Security Trust. And it's an organization which is very similar in its intended and stated purposes to the ADL, which is to defend Jewish people against discrimination and anti-Semitism. Now, of course, what it does in practice is a bit different because it finds it very difficult, or rather, it doesn't really want to distinguish very clearly between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, and it wants to try and tar the left and Muslims with the same brush as the far right, as being racist against Jews, which, of course, is not a reasonable comparison.
That was fired sociologist David Miller in the UK, speaking to Pacifica producer Steve Zeltzer. And that concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by Steve Zeltzer with assistance from Ann Garrison. Our executive producers are Akua Holtz, Polina Vasiliev, and Steve Zeltzer. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. You can follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD and on Facebook at COVID, Race, and Democracy. I've been your host, Tia Coatley. Thanks for listening.